Hey everybody, I'm C.
I'm Jen.
And you're listening to Tomtit and Baobab.
Welcome back to Tomtit and Baobab, the New York Times Spelling Bee inspired podcast that's all about words, word games, and the word nerds who love them.
Jen, is this the week I've been waiting for? Is it finally vintage vocab day?
Do you know what vintage aged people need to do?
What?
Go to the doctor! Unfortunately, my mom has a doctor's appointment today and can't join us. So hopefully next week.
Bonnie, we need you.
I know. She's coming. Like I said, hopefully next week.
She better.
She said yes. If she has another doctor's appointment, there's nothing I can do about that. She has to be able to see.
Bonnie, be able to see, be healthy. We need vintage vocab. Everybody is clamoring for Bonnie. Okay. Speaking of which, our favorite children's book writer and illustrator, Sarah Brannon, wrote us with another idea for the segment title. You want to hear what hers was?
Yes.
Wordly wisdom.
Wordly wisdom. That's not bad. I like it. But I think my mom is sort of wedded to vintage vocab at this point. I'll ask her. We'll see.
I'll be honest. I'm kind of wedded to vintage vocab at this point, too. I'm sorry, Sarah. But I did want to give Sarah a shout out because it sounds like her book, Uncle Bobby's Wedding, is being developed for TV.
That is so cool.
Isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Speaking of weddings, right? Wedded to vintage vocab, Uncle Bobby's Wedding. Uh-huh. You didn't even know you made that connection. See, this is why I'm so good at connections. Sarah, congratulations. It's awesome.
And you know what else I happen to know about Sarah while I'm talking about her?
What?
I know she got to see the eclipse in Vermont. And so I assume she got to witness totality, and I am jealous. Jen, what was your eclipse experience last Monday?
I'm jealous too. My eclipse experience is that I watched in a lawn chair on my front lawn.
Do you have pictures? Please tell me you have pictures.
I have a selfie of me and my neighbor. So my neighbor Rhonda came over, and we were sitting in the chair with our glasses on, staring up at the sky, and at first, I like went outside and I saw it and I was like, oh, so cool. Like it's the very beginning. And then I was like, I'm going to go back.
You had glasses, I take it. Yeah.
And I was like, I even checked to like make sure that they were the right ones.
Real.
That weren't going to burn your eyes out.
Right.
So I came back in thinking like, oh, I'll come back out and see it a little bit later. When I came back out, it was totally cloudy.
Oh.
But then I told you I came in and you were like, no, go back out. This is the height of the eclipse.
Right.
So I went back out and I was like, okay, I'm committing to it now. I was like, I'm sitting in this chair staring up at the sky for the next 2 hours and hopefully it's going to reappear.
2 hours? The whole thing was only like 2 hours.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. I literally sat there and watched the whole thing.
It was really cool, wasn't it?
Yes.
So I kind of want to do totality now. Like now that I've seen this, I'm so, and it was funny.
Totally. Totally awesome.
My son, Gus, who's in middle school, and his friends and other middle schoolers around all seemed very annoyed because they all thought that it was going to get dark. And like, I just, schools really missed the opportunity to like do real science stuff.
Educate.
I just keep hearing about a bunch of kids and teachers who were like, wait, it didn't get dark. And I'm like, oh.
That is so annoying.
Right. But he still, he did have the glasses and he looked up and he thought that was cool.
Well, and that's good. And hopefully hopefully his mother and father gave him a science education. Oh, I just thought it got cold.
It did. Well, it got a little dark. And actually my house got crazy dark because, you know, that wasn't the direct sun. So actually it was kind of interesting.
Because it was super warm. And then I had to come in and put on my winter coat. So I think in the pictures I might be wearing like a giant coat.
Which is funny because, it was really warm before
It was. And then it got really warm again once it was finished.
So cool. It is cool. Yeah. And Jen, I hate to eclipse this conversation, but.
You want to talk about something other than the sun and the moon and the stars from last week?
I do. Let's talk about the week in bees. This is the part of the show where we talk about bees from the previous week. Today, we're starting with Saturday, April 6th, and ending with Friday, April 12th. Jen, we got a few messages from our listener, David, recently complaining about the pangrams.
I saw that. He was not a fan of puppy-like from last week or hangable from this week.
But somehow he had no problem with brickbat. Is that vintage vocab? Is that what the deal is?
Brickbat. I think it's vintage vocab. We're going to have to ask my mom. Like, that's totally on the list.
Right? So, okay. Yeah. So, brickback was, for those of you who don't know.
I think you just said brickback.
Oh, see? I don't even know what the freaking word is. Brickbat is from Thursday, April 11th. I got it early in the morning. How did I get it? By guessing. Lots and lots and lots of compounds. And when it came up, I was like, what? Huh?
I did the same.
And then I wrote to you and Leslie, yeah. And I said, wait till you see the pangram. And then both of you pretty much had the same reaction I did. And I guess a lot of other people on social media also thought it was crazy, but then other people thought it was easy, like David. Insane, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I found it because I did the same thing. I put in every single compound that I could possibly think of. And there were a lot of good ones. For instance, wait, I have to tell you some of the good ones that did not count. Rat bait.
Rat bait. That'd be good.
Trick bat.
Trick bat I liked. How about cat trick?
Cat trick, yes.
Oh, that doesn't have a B, but I still like it.
No, but cat trick. Yeah. It doesn't have to. Wasn't it a T in the middle? Trick bra.
Trick bra. A bra trick. What about a bra trick?
Bra trick. Crack bait.
Oh, I mean, I like
so many good ones that did not count.
Now, can we talk about what brickbat actually is?
Yes,
and
we
in
can.
Different dictionaries, I'm seeing different words. Mm-hmm.
Same.
And so basically, it's one of two things. It's either a piece of brick, especially one used as a missile, which bricks that are used as a missile is not a part of my general day. I just want to say. Or secondly, an unfavorable or critical remark, which seems to be more of the way it's used. And I kind of like it.
I like it better that way.
Yeah. And I'm looking in Collins, and actually they do have the frequency charts in Collins, and it seemed to have hit its zenith somewhere in the 1970s. So see, vintage vocab, because 70s is vintage now, Jen.
You know, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense. Well, I don't know, maybe because of like riots and stuff in the 70s.
Well, unless it's insults and people just said
brickbat. I like the Oxford Languages definition.
Go ahead.
Because the one that you just read from Collins is very similar to Merriam-Webster, where their first definition is a fragment of hard material, such as brick, especially used as a missile, right?
Missile.
Oxford Languages says a piece of brick, typically when used as a weapon.
Wait.
He had received a blow with a brickbat.
Well, it's the same idea. I don't understand the difference.
It's the same idea. I just like the way that they phrased it better. Like, it makes more sense. Like, a brick as a missile. No, a brick as a weapon. Right?
Okay. Do you know that brick clay is also a
word?
That
one makes sense. See, I would have guessed that before I guessed brickbat.
Well, it's really British, but still, I like that.
That makes sense.
Brick earth is a word. Brick in. I'm just saying, for the next time you've got
brick
issues.
Brick earth will never be in there.
Right. Brick clay will probably never be in there. I don't even know if it could.
Probably.
One, two, three, four, five.
No, too many.
Six, seven, eight. Yeah, see?
Yeah, too many.
Anyway.
So back to the insults part.
Yeah.
I did, like, Leslie wrote to us today and gave us that phrase, bouquets or brickbats.
Uh-huh.
Somebody had posted that on Facebook.
Oh, right. That's pretty.
Right? As, like, a phrase, which I've never heard, but I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next time you insult me, I'm going to tell you to keep your brickbats to yourself.
What I think is funny is that people online apparently were either really mad or doing their thing of like, don't be mad. Why do you get so mad? I'm learning a new word. And I am going to go with the group of people who, I mean, mad is a difficult one for this one because you could figure it out. But I do not like when the pangram is like not a real word, because brickbat is not a real word. I'm sorry.
But apparently it was to some people. Like, it was to David. My friend Andrew, who I have now hooked on the B, he said, did you get the pangram? And I was like, I haven't got it yet, but I heard that it's crazy. And he was like, oh, no, it's not.
Yeah, I get that for some people, this is not a weird word, but I got to tell you, it's a weird word. That's just how it goes.
So. It's a weird word. I totally agree.
What'd you think about hangable? Did you have a problem with that like David did?
All right, let's talk about hangable real quick. I didn't have a problem with the word hangable. I had a problem with all of the ubbles that he didn't count, which is always true, right? Bannable, gaggable, gaugeable, gleanable, labelable. None of those counted. Hangable counted. And I think that's kind of what David was mad about too.
Right. The not
right?
enough ables. Okay.
Yeah. So I was annoyed about it for that reason. Yeah. What about you?
I mean, I got it. I was perfectly happy. Whenever it's an able, I know there's going to be a lot of ables that don't count. Actually, today on Friday the 12th, mm-hmm. I'm really happy with all the uns that count because usually no uns count. And while it's annoying to have an un and an ed just because there's so many words and you don't remember what you've missed.
I know. And I'm still two down and one of them is a pangram.
Oh, is it the perfect pangram?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, is it hard?
I don't know. I haven't got it yet.
Oh, I just assumed that I was not seeing it.
Let's put it this way. I looked at this very early, again, today, Friday morning, and then I have been teaching and working since then. So I have not gotten back to look at it. The first two pangrams were very easy, right? And then there's some weird seven letter that I at least didn't see right from the beginning. Hmm.
So, okay. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Well, maybe it should, but.
Well, I base my, like, if you haven't gotten it yet, then I feel okay that I haven't gotten it yet.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
You are my idol of pangraminicity.
I do like getting the pangrams. So I'm a little bit worried that it's another one of these weird pangrams that you're just like, ugh.
Logo file, Saturday 4/6.
You liked it, right? You liked that word.
Who doesn't like, I mean, who that likes word games doesn't like the word logo file?
Right. But you're annoyed because?
Because of all the other files that did not count.
Yes, I agree with that. Especially, I mean, we had a discussion of a couple of them. Mm-hmm. But for me, the most glaring is heliophile because like logo file, once you got a file, it's a really real word. Do you know what I mean? Like geophile had something weird about it where they're like, you don't really use it.
Because I was like, geophilic is how they usually use it. Right. But it's also a word. Heliophile,
100%. And it's like, it's springtime. It would have been a nice word to have.
And like the week of the eclipse.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Did you like that I called you a Google file?
I did. Thank you. I am.
You know, that day had a couple of weird words in it, though.
Like
gloop.
I like gloop. What's wrong?
I like
gloop
too. Do you know that gloop is not in Merriam-Webster?
Really? Why'd he count it?
Really? I don't know. Because of Augustus gloop, maybe?
Willy Wonka reference for anyone who does not know.
Who doesn't know that? But isn't that weird that it's not in Merriam-Webster?
It is weird that it's not in Merriam-Webster and that he counted it. I wonder why. Do we know why it's not in Merriam-Webster?
I don't know.
It's kind of onomatopoeic.
Gloop, yes. Gloop. It is. I like that. That might also have to go into housekeeping because I'm curious about that. And the other word that day, pie hole.
Oh, I love pie hole. It made me so happy.
Well, I had mixed feelings about pie hole because I don't think it's one word.
I was wandering around. Yes. And as a matter of fact, what was funny is that day, I don't remember what happened today, but I was walking around and all of a sudden I started yelling, pie hole. And I was very happy. I love
okay, well,
that
I think
happens.
It should be hyphenated, number one.
No,
number two.
Shut your pie hole.
Number two. I was like, that's a pretty interesting word. And I was thinking about doing it for a deep dive. So I looked it up. Do you know that the first documented reference to pie hole comes from Stephen King's novel, Christine?
No
in 1983.
Really?
And the line.
How is that not your deep dive? That's
and
so
the
cool.
line is, then shut your pie hole.
And he made that up? Stephen King is responsible for pie hole?
That is the first known use of it that is documented that people know of. Now, there is a little bit of feeling that maybe it was like people were using it informally because the word cake hole started to be used in the 1940s. And it was actually military slang, which I thought you would like because you like military slang. So cake hole. And this was in a book called Service Slang in 1943. Cake hole is the airman's name for his or anyone else's mouth. Yeah. So some people think that like pie hole might have been like an alternative to cake hole. And then Stephen King just wrote it down. But everybody attributes it to Stephen King.
Oh, I love that. Oh, right? That's good. Yes. Yeah. Maybe you said something really good if that's just your you're telling me.
I mean, deep dive would be over now. It's like not that deep of a dive. It's like, okay, there's one thing about it. This is what
it
is.
I like that. That's why I do different things. But anyway, where are we? Gloop and pie hole. Let's go to a different day.
Okay.
Let's talk about no women. Let's talk about the women problem in this puzzle. Women are just ignored.
Problem.
They're either not included, no bow women, no bell women, or we're not allowed to talk about the raping.
Yes, we're not allowed to talk about the raping of women. You know, thank you for saying that because that is exactly how I wanted to frame that.
Okay.
So trigger warning. We're going to talk about raping right now.
Well, we're not. So we're talking about the word raping. But go
we're
ahead.
Talking about the word raping. But yeah. Apparently the word raping needs a content warning.
Yeah.
Now, to me, and what day was that it wasn't allowed in?
It was the 8th, the eclipse day.
Right. Okay. So Monday.
Yeah.
Raping was not included. R-A-P-I-N-G. Now.
The next day.
You know what words were included today?
What?
Oh, well, the next day, hangable.
Well, I was also going to say, and like, I mean, if it wasn't the next day, it was the day after that, where if there is raping and a baby's had, screw you if you live in Arizona. But anyway.
Right. Exactly.
Let's pretend and raping then, like, doesn't today, happen. Yeah.
Gunman was in there. Gunman was in there. Right?
Yeah. Like, it's funny because I had book club last night, and in this book club, the book was about like Puritan times, right?
Yeah.
And there was an insane amount of raping in this book, right? It's a historical fiction thing.
Welcome to world history.
Right, exactly. And what's funny is not having anything to do with the bee or like saying it in a way that wasn't real, like we kept talking about all the raping.
Yeah.
I said that word this week more than I've said it ever.
And then I say it every time I talk about Donald Trump. You know,
now to be fair,
I'm really upset about this.
There was also no gapping, which I don't understand. No piking, which makes no sense. No panging, no pipping. I mean, there are other words that aren't there. And so to just, I guess there is a argument that's somehow.
There's no argument.
Well, like, why is there no gapping
here? I don't.
Like, that's so clearly, or piking. I talk about a word I also use all the time, you know, since
I have no
exercise.
Idea.
We are piking all
those
the
things
time.
Those things do not make sense. But let's get back to the real issue here. This is a word game. People online, apparently, because we asked Leslie to send us some screenshots of what people online were saying today, because I didn't want to be insensitive to people. But people online are like, oh, they want to keep this a light word game that doesn't make people think about bad things.
Gunman.
Yeah. Like, what? And I feel like it was mostly men that were saying this stuff, although not entirely.
Always men.
The game is edited by a man. And men get raped too, by the way. Hello.
Yeah.
It is a word that should not be erased from our vocabulary.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're going to see it. So even if it doesn't count, if you are triggered by the word raping, you are going to see raping in this puzzle. And then when you're told that it doesn't exist or it doesn't count, you're going to feel terrible. So
now, this has been an argument with other things too, and we don't always feel that way when we're talking about racial sensitivity. So just to be like, why is there a double standard?
Because it's not offensive. It's not offensive. It's like
Raping is very offensive.
Yes, the act of raping is very offensive, but it is not it's not a brickbat that you hurl at somebody. Okay.
Oh, brother.
I
like the way you brought that back.
This
good
upsets
work.
My feminist sensibilities.
I hear you. I'm with you.
Okay, let's lighten things up. Let's gabble. What did you think about gabble on Tuesday 4/9?
Okay, does gabble mean something other than gobble?
No, it means
that's
gobble.
The way I took it. Okay, good.
Have you ever heard that word before?
Yeah, I got it, but I was thinking gabble, gobble.
I got it too, but like gabble? That's weird to me. Gabble.
You know what able word you didn't put on the list of but no?
Oh,
why no engageable?
No engageable.
Right?
Yes.
Like, that seems
that
to me
too.
Like such a word. Or gaggable.
Gaggable. I know. All these things are totally good words.
Did you get baccarat on Thursday?
Do you know that you don't actually pronounce baccarat, baccarat?
Baccarat.
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 Baccarat. But I say baccarat too. Have you ever played baccarat?
No, it's always like one of those games in the casino that seems way too difficult. So
I think we should try to play it sometime.
I think that's a good recipe for being in trouble.
I think that's definitely vintage vocab.
Yeah, but it's like vintage vocab we know, right?
Backbit. Is backbit a vintage word?
I don't think so. Isn't it a horse word? What is it?
No, it is the past tense of backbite, which is to say mean or spiteful things about a person.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I was thinking it was like a horse bit word.
Now,
again, a weird word I got, but mostly I was just guessing random.
Guessed it randomly too, after trying again every compound that I could think of. Back bit. I get backbite, like a backbiter, like somebody who bites you in the back. but like, I feel so back bit. Like, when would you use that?
I feel so back bit.
Do you know what my downfall was this week, Cecilia?
What?
Besides compounds. I had a downfall other than compounds this week. What is my other downfall?
Food. What was your food problem?
Food. Okay. So it came down to the wire for me on Rapini.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Which was on
I mean, it didn't been in there a couple times. So what made you figure it out?
Because I know that that is a food. Like once I saw it, I was like, oh, Rapini. Right. I know that. But it was totally not on my radar. It took me a really long time. It was my last word.
Okay.
And then yesterday, 411, Tikka, T-I-K-K-A,
yeah.
I took every clue that I could possibly take, and I still could not get it. And finally, well, I was like, Mom, word. What's,
I mean,
like,
you know, it's
names
not
a- and Indian foods? And she, like, she didn't
Wait, how did you know it was an Indian food?
Because I took a whole bunch of hints.
Gotcha.
So she didn't even say it. She said something that was like it, and I was like, a Tikka?
And you had to look it up?
It was the same sort of thing. It wasn't the same sort of thing because I know what Rapini is. Tikka, I was like.
Yeah. And you wouldn't like it. I mean, I love Tikka, but
meat,
like.
Isn't it?
No. It's the sauce. You can have chana masala, Tikka chana masala, which is like, you know, chickpeas with stuff. Yeah. But Tikka, I think it's a little bit of a red sauce, like a tomato based sauce, but I think it tends to be spicy. Huh. If I'm saying something wrong, people who are listening, I apologize.
Is it messy?
That's what I think of it. Is it messy? I mean, you know, if you spill it all over you, I guess it would be messy.
Okay. Well, then I think we need to go to the next section, because I have something to say about messy eaters.
Oh, all right. Well, that was exciting. Let's do it. Word of the week. This is the part of our show where we take a closer look at one word from the previous week's puzzles. Unless you're me, and it's last week, and you do bonus words as well. Jen, did you do something special? Or maybe even orchidaceous in response?
Well, I just referenced messy eating, so you probably can guess what my word is.
All right. What is it?
Oh, you can't guess what my word is?
I don't know. I don't even know what the words were last
What do
week.
Messy eaters need?
What? Napkins?
Yes! Napkin. Wait,
napkin is your word?
Napkin is my word.
Oh my God.
So, you know what a napkin is.
I've seen one. I've heard of this.
A napkin, according to Merriam-Webster, is a piece of material such as cloth or paper used at table. I think they left a word out. To wipe the lips or fingers and protect the clothes. It can also just be a small cloth or a towel. And somehow every dictionary likes to say sanitary napkin as the third definition, which is absolutely vintage vocab.
Sanitary napkin. Though, don't you know what that is? Like, that's a thing.
Yeah. But you do know. You think that, like, anybody under the age of, like, I don't know, 30 knows what that is?
You don't think they still call them sanitary napkins, like, on the packaging?
So.
If I look up sanitary napkins right now.
Pads.
Like, what is it? Like, always with wings?
Are you looking it up?
Yeah, I'm looking them up right now. And so if you look up sanitary napkins, like, I look up always sanitary pads with wings. That's a thing, right? But I'm trying to see if, like, on the thing it says anywhere that they're sanitary.
Okay, well, that is a complete tangent. So you keep looking for that while I tell you about napkins. Okay. Now, napkin.
Yes.
Nap plus kin.
Right, of course.
That's how it breaks down, right?
Okay.
But
your kin needs a nap.
Exactly. You would think that it had something to do with whatever nap means.
Right.
But no. Merriam-Webster has 6 definitions of nap. 2 of them have to do with sleeping, a noun and a verb, short, brief sleep.
Okay.
2 of them have to do with fabric, so a hairy, fuzzy, or downy surface of fabric. To raise a nap on something is the verb. And then there is a British use of the word nap, which is a pick or a recommendation as a good bet to win a contest. But nap, as in napkin, has nothing to do with any of those things.
Okay.
It also, for another tangent, because I told you I wanted nap, K-N-A-P, to be in the puzzle this week.
Right.
That is also an unrelated nap word. K-N-A-P means to break with a quick blow. And knapsack is from the German nappen, which means to eat, because it's like a snack bag is a knapsack. How interesting is that?
Cool.
They have nothing to do with napkins, though. Okay.
Okay.
In the late 14th century, we get napkin in this sense of meaning a table napkin, right?
Okay.
It comes from not nap, N-A-P, plus kin, but nap, N-A-P-E, or N-A-P-P-E, plus kin. And a nap with an E is an Anglo-French word that means tablecloth, cloth cover, or towel. So there's already this word, N-A-P-E, which is tablecloth or cloth napkin. Kin, do you know what kin is a suffix for?
No. I mean, it's your family. Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
Oh.
Kin is a suffix that means little, as okay. in munchkin.
Oh, that makes sense.
That makes sense. And a word that I learned looking this up is minikin.
Ah,
like
what's a
minikini, but minikin. And it has nothing to do with minikinis. It means a small or dainty creature.
Ah, well, you like that.
I love that. It's mini. It's like mini mini or kinkin. A minikin. I love this word. Okay, sorry. So napkin is a small tablecloth cover or towel. Obviously.
Right.
Now, nap, N-A-P-E, comes from the Latin mappa, M-A-P-P-A. And apparently the French changed, and apparently the French did this a lot. Old French changes M's to N's. So napa was a napkin or a cloth or a flag. It was like a piece of cloth. And our word map comes from that as well, because they were drawn on these cloths.
Ah, cool.
Right? So who would have thought that your napkin is related to the word map? Weird.
Right.
The ancient Romans are believed to be the first people to use cloth napkins while eating. They had two different kinds of things that were related to this idea of a cloth, like a small cloth. There was a sudarium, which was like a sweat cloth for your face, basically like a handkerchief, right? And that's how you get, well, long story about Veronica's veil. We'll talk about that some other time. Face of Jesus. And then a mappa, which was a large cloth for eating while reclining. And basically, it seems like people brought their own mappas, or that's not the plural. The plural is mappy with an A-E on the end, brought their own mappy to a banquet. So like you were responsible for bringing your own napkin to dinner.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
It is kind of weird. But apparently it wasn't weird. And this I thought was super fascinating. Sorry, I'm like obviously down a rabbit hole on this. I talked about mopeen when we were talking about Familec words, right?
Because your family likes that, yes.
Because my family likes to share a towel as a napkin, which is kind of gross. But
yes.
Mopeen comes from the word mappina, M-A-P-P-I-N-A, in some Italian dialects, which is a cloth or rag, which obviously comes from mappa.
Ah.
Mappa, mappina, mappine.
Gotcha.
So I, like, double bonus that we found that out. All right. Going back to napkins, though. Want to go back to napkins.
Let's do it.
The first people to have an idea of, like, a napkin, like a concept of something that you wipe your fingers on, believed to be the Spartans, who used a lump of dough to wipe their hands.
Okay.
So you would have like a piece of dough on the table.
Yeah, this makes sense to me.
Does it though?
Yeah, it does. Think about it. Because I spend a lot of time in bread these days.
That's
so yes,
true.
It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. But then when you have like dough stuck to your hands?
Well, it depends how much flour you have on them. So
yeah.
I could see that it would be like an antidote to like oily things. You know what I mean?
That's true. Like you dip your hands in olive oil first and then rub them on the dough.
Right.
I don't know if that's how it worked. Anyway, paper napkins originated in China in the 2nd century AD.
Oh, interesting. Smart.
Yeah,
thank
and
you,
we're used.
Thank you, Chinese people, because
service.
That's very helpful.
Maybe,
I love
maybe not. We're going to get to paper napkins in a minute.
Don't you love napkins? I mean, I always feel bad using a ton of them, but I really do love them. But anyway.
Well, they're very useful.
Yes, they're very useful.
Unless, because you don't have to use a napkin, right? So in the Middle Ages, people talk about the decline of napkins in Europe.
Yeah, because they were gross.
Okay. Well, yeah. They would wipe their hands on their clothes or on the tablecloth.
Right.
And there was a person, like some super rich people would hire a person called a ewerer, E-W-E-R-E-R, who would carry a ewer, like a jug of water, and would bring it around. And there would be like a communal towel for washing and drying your hands sometimes.
Nice.
But the later Middle Ages, they started to put long napkins on the tables for people to share, kind of like a mopeen.
Yeah.
And then in the 15th century, the French court started to actually provide individual napkins to people for dinner.
Good work.
We owe that to the French.
Okay? Awesome. French. Good work.
This started to catch on. Everybody was like, hey, let's do what the French are doing because they're super fashionable and get napkins. And the story kind of goes that like as forks became more popular in Europe in the 16th century,
they didn't even have forks.
Napkins were less useful because then, you know, you weren't.
And they're like, yeah, we're great.
Right. And at that point, although forks, totally another tangent of interesting stuff because I looked up fork history and forks have been around since like the Bronze Age in China. So Europeans were very slow in picking up forks.
Not surprising.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. As napkins are becoming less useful and practical, they start to become more ornamental and formal. And so you get all, you know how we do like, if you go to a fancy restaurant, like your napkin might be folded into a swan or something, right?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. So in the 16th century, Italian nobility started to have these things called triumphs. They were basically sculptures made out of starched folded napkins on your table.
Hmm.
And they were super intricate. I'll send you pictures of them. They're really cool. What I don't understand is whether they actually used those napkins or whether it was just like, oh, we can do this with napkins. You know what I mean? Like, did you grab one in the middle and like the whole sculpture fell down? Because I don't know how that works. But you start to get this fancy napkin stuff. So you also get fancy napkins. And there was like one that is online in the collection at Bard that has some Old Testament story on it. And it's inscribed with the name of the owner of the napkin and their social position and the year and there's a crest on it. And so you get fancy napkins. And I'm thinking, so are you wiping your face on it? Or are you like, oh, this dinner's boring. Let me look at my napkin and find out about this story. That seems kind of weird. Like it was a biblical story in this case. So like you're wiping your mouth on a biblical story. That felt weird to me. But still, fancy napkins.
I like it.
In the 19th century, the late 19th century, that is when paper napkins really start to become popular.
And why?
It has something to do with the Japanese. The Japanese were like, hey, paper napkins are a great idea. And then people started to get into napkins. And the way that they got introduced into like Europe and ultimately America, I guess, was they would print souvenir table napkins produced in Japan, and they would print stuff on them. And then, you know, people who were traveling would start to collect them. And so that's kind of another situation where you're like, oh, so you're collecting the napkin? Aren't you supposed to use the napkin? Not sure. And there are lots of examples that you can see of those. And at first, people in the US and the UK were very against paper napkins. There was this quote from 1896, this woman in Brooklyn Magazine who wrote, paper napkins? Who ever heard of such nonsense? What good are they? Like there was this, a little bit of outrage against the paper napkins until 1948 when Emily Post, you know, Miss Etiquette Lady, was like, you know what?
I like these things.
Well, she didn't come right out and say that she liked them, but she was like, if you're going to have lunch and you need a napkin, it's better to use a new paper napkin than to reuse your dirty napkin for breakfast.
Nice.
Right? So once Emily Post gave it the okay, people were like, all right, we can do this. And then, you know, you start to get paper napkins. And KFC was actually one of the first restaurants to replace their cloth napkins with paper napkins.
Really?
I think it's ironic because they're supposed to be finger licking good.
Yes, but then when you're done, you want to clean your hands. So you clean your fingers with your spit.
Your hands and then your tongue.
Yeah, and then you're like, all right, time to fix that up.
Anyway, back to your point about loving paper napkins. Paper napkins became like a big thing. And they're not, they can't really be recycled very well because they're already a lot of times made out of recycled paper.
Compost.
Yes, you can compost them. And that is what you should do. A lot of people will throw their paper napkins in the recycling, which is bad.
Right.
Because they're contaminated from the food, right? So you should compost your napkins if you're going to use them.
Right. I do
that. It turns out, though, see,
that
a lot of people are not purchasing napkins anymore. There is a napkin decline. What people are purchasing is paper towels.
Oh, I'm like that too. Sorry.
In like 2017-ish around then, Georgia Pacific, started making commercials for Vanity Fair napkins.
Right.
To try to bring back the napkin. And I have to send you a link because these commercials are hilarious.
That's awesome.
And I am going to post one online.
So wait, why is it a problem? Can it still be a napkin if it's a paper towel? It's the napkin is
one of the ways they try to sell it is like, these Vanity Fair napkins are like part paper towel, part napkin.
Yes, this is ridiculous.
It's kind of ridiculous. Like, fine, you sell paper. If people are buying paper towels, why do you need to sell them napkins?
Right. They just want to do a special thing. Yes.
The best one of these commercials, see, is this thing where they don't come out and say napkin outright, but it has all these people sitting at a table with a napkin and a mug on top of it in a kitchen.
Right.
And they do these interviews where they're talking about really like serious, important stuff about like the table is like, is home. People don't sit at the table anymore. I came out to my parents at the table. The table is where I learned the most important lessons of my life. And then it's like, let's go back to the table. Vanity Fair napkins.
Oh my God. So weird. Because mostly you need a napkin when you're not at the table. I mean, that's the main place I need napkins, like when I'm running around. And then you need napkins.
I agree.
Yeah. Silly.
That is the unbelievable history of the napkin, Cecilia. The word and the thing.
That was great. Thank you. It was almost so unbelievable that I don't even know if we should talk about more unbelievable words.
Of course we should. It's in the name, unbelievable words. Super simple words we've come across and want to quickly share with one another and with you. See, what's your unbelievable word today?
What is my unbelievable word? Well, it is a word that I kind of knew, kind of didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw it, I said, it's the week for it. And it is syzygy.
Syzygy. Oh, wait.
Yes, right? Because you know it, but you don't really remember what it is. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. What a cool set of letters, right?
Tell me what it is.
It is, if three celestial bodies in any solar system are lined up, you could say they're aligned in syzygy. Often this applies to the sun, the moon, and the earth, but any planets can be in syzygy. And obviously I'm talking about this because eclipse.
That's a great word. I wish I had known that before the eclipse so I could have referred to syzygy.
I know. It is really funny to say the word syzygy. So.
It's a great word.
Yours,
Thank
Jen.
You for reintroducing it, Jimmy.
You're welcome.
My word, before we started recording, I told you, see, that I am taking a calligraphy class. My word is kind of the opposite of calligraphy. It is griffonage.
Griffonage. So this is when you graffiti?
No, this is careless handwriting, a crude or illegible scrawl.
Oh my God, that's totally my signature. That's awesome.
That's
everybody's
signature. Everybody's signature these days is griffonage.
That Gus's teacher actually wrote and said that he must have forged my signature because there's no way that was mine. I was like, no, that's
you
me.
You should have him go back to his teacher and say, I can't help it if my mom has griffonage.
Is that how you'd say it?
I think you can use it any way you want. I wrote a sample sentence, which was, one wonders how pharmacies get prescriptions right, given the griffonage of most doctors.
Ah, good.
ChatGPT wrote a sentence that was, the professor was appalled by the student's griffonage, noting the careless and illegible handwriting on the exam paper.
Okay.
And in the process, I learned about a second word that can mean bad handwriting.
Oh, look, you want two unbelievable words.
Typography.
Typography?
Cacography.
Oh, like cacophony, but instead it's cacography.
Yes.
I like that.
C-A-C-O-G-R-A-P-H-Y.
I didn't realize that caca was always like
it can also
bad.
Mean bad spelling. So you're topographic in all senses.
I'm griffic and wait, what was the word again?
Griffonage.
I practice griffonage and I am cacographic. I like it.
Yeah.
Jen, that is definitely wild. For the wild card, we were supposed to be doing vintage vocab. So I protest this entire segment.
Cecilia, my mom had to go to the doctor. And the whole point about the wild card is that it is wild. We do whatever we want. We roll with it.
Then I want to do vintage vocab from the doctor's office. Hello.
Next week, we will be doing vintage vocab.
All right, fine. All right. I guess since you surprised me with the awesome spelling bee tree last week, mm-hmm. which if you guys haven't looked at it, listen to our episode and go check it out.
Yes.
Anyway, I will surprise you with something this week.
Okay.
I know you love animals.
I do.
So I thought we could do the always fun to think about group of animal names.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I can't believe we've never done this for the wild card before.
Yeah, it seems so obvious that it seems silly. But when I looked at it, I was like, well, I don't know these. So
I love these. These are some of my favorite words. I mean, I probably don't know them all, but I love groups of animal.
Yes. Names. And somebody just the other day was like, murder of crows. And I was like, duh, crows. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, that is. That's an easy one.
Do you want me to give you the animal and you have to tell me the grouping? Or do you want me to give you the group and you have to tell me the animal? Which one?
Let's mix it up. Let's do some of each.
Okay. A fever of?
A fever of? Some kind of bird?
No, though they do kind of flap.
Bats?
Good idea, but in the water.
I have no idea. What is it?
Those sounds are great. A fever of stingrays.
This
is from Word Genius, just so you know.
Yeah.
Stingrays are known to amass in the thousands and in such large numbers that when they feed, it looks like a frenzy of movement. The collective noun fever originated from the word's lesser used definition, a state of nervous excitement or agitation. Isn't that interesting?
I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
I never heard that one before.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. How about if you're a penguin? Now, I will say there are actually a lot of things you could call a group of penguins. Just so you know, there are a couple things you could say.
A wait staff of penguins. A tap troop of penguins.
I like all that.
A court of penguins.
I like
a ballroom of penguins.
Okay, so it could be called
of penguins.
Now, there were much easier ones. You could have called it a colony. You could have called it a rookery. Those are both
colony.
Kind of birds.
Yeah,
names.
I know colony of penguins.
You could have called it a creche, creche.
Oh, I like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you could have called it a raft. But the first one, the one that I was going to say, really describes what penguins do. So you were in the right idea when you were thinking like, you know, that the tap dance and stuff. But come on, what else think about how penguins walk. What are they doing?
Waddle.
Waddle. It's a waddle of penguins.
Waddle of penguins. That's
and of
so
course,
cute.
It is because of how they walk.
That's
pretty
so
good,
cute.
Huh?
Yeah, I haven't heard a waddle. I've heard colony of penguins.
Yeah.
But who likes colonies? So I like waddle a lot better.
Yeah. All right. Ready?
Good one. Yeah.
How about a shiver?
Oh, wait. I know this one. Shoot. A shiver of.
Something kind of scary.
A shiver of. Nope.
A shiver of sharks. Now, as you know, most sharks are single, so it's kind of hard to have a shiver of sharks, except that there are some species like the whale shark that do swim together in a small group, and probably because of its alliteration and also because you get scared when you see a shark. So shiver of sharks, pretty cool.
It is. How come you're not asking me ones that I know, like a clowder?
I think all of these are weird, which I like.
A cats and a parliament of owls.
All right. I'll give you another alliterative one.
Okay.
If you are a group of porcupines, you'd be called a?
A?
I gave you a hint.
That it starts with a P.
And you're a porcupine. And if you're a porcupine, you're getting
pins,
there. You're so close.
Cushion of porcupine.
That was really good. Or we might say you're a prickle of porcupines.
A prickle of porcupines. That's
Isn't
a good one.
Like, I wouldn't believe this if somebody just told me. And honestly, I didn't double check any of these. So let's hope they're real. All right. One more.
Okay.
If you are a mob, who would you be? What animal would you be if you're a mob?
I feel like I've heard this one before, too, and then I'm not going to get it. Meerkats.
Oh, I like that. It is not alliterative.
Okay. A mob of...
This is an animal that... I'm going to give you a real big hint.
Okay.
Boxes.
Oh, kangaroos.
Yes, a mob of kangaroos.
Mob of kangaroos.
Pretty good, huh?
What do you call a group of wallaroos?
They're a wob of wallaroos.
Yes, those were really good. And they made me feel like I know nothing about animal groups, which I never thought to be true before. Well,
start boning up, Jen.
Seriously.
If it helps you, I didn't know any of them except for maybe the kangaroo, and I probably wouldn't have gotten it in a pinch. So.
All right. That was fun.
Thank you. And while everybody gets to study in their animal groups, we'll tell you that that is it for this episode of Tom Tit and Baobab.
Thanks for being with us. Oh, what do you think? What's a group of bees called?
A group of bees. Oh, a hive. Aren't they a hive? A
hive. There's not another word, like a buzz of bees or something.
Swarm. Swarm of bees.
Swarm of bees. Thanks for being with us in a swarm or a hive or a buzz. We hope you'll do it again next week. We drop a new episode every Monday.
And in the meantime, be in touch. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, or email us at tomtittandbaobab@gmail.com.
We want to know all about the bees you like, bees you hate, words you missed, words you'd like to know about, and whether you prefer a bouquet or a brick bat.
I like that. If you like TNB and never want to miss an episode, subscribe or follow us.
Even better, leave a rating or a review. This helps other word nerds and puzzle lovers find our very indie podcast. Try not to use brick bats in your review.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.